The question was, what's the connection between the two stories, the feeding story and the walking on water story? And these are stories that have been passed down in that area for centuries. God's walked on water and God's fed people miraculously. So this is John's way of telling a story that talks to the divinity of Jesus. What else? I mean, this is a story. The feeding of the 5,000 is a story we've heard for those of us who grew up in church many, many times. Yeah, Wayne. Yeah. So the question had to do with, like, I wonder about the feelings of the people who were following Jesus then and the 5,000 who were fed, and then the feeling of the people in the boat as they see Jesus kind of walking toward them, extra buoyant. I don't know. That's an interesting thought. What do you feel when you've seen something that doesn't make sense in some ways? Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Of all the food in the world, why bread and why fish? Yeah, so they're by the Sea of Tiberias, and along the coast, it would have been the diet would have largely consisted of fish. Barley would have been seasonal, so that probably tells which season this story is taking place in, as opposed to wheat, though, because wheat and barley were both grown, but at different times. That's my best answer for that one. There was a lot of fish. You know, archaeological records show that one of the thriving industries around that lake was dried fish. So they would bring fish in, and they would dry it actually on the beach, and then that would preserve it enough so they could carry it with them. Yeah. Any other thoughts? Being surprised about the fact that it was 5,000 people who followed this character along the shore, kind of like last week's story from Mark. They see a boat. They know it's Jesus. They follow the boat along the shore, and they're waiting for him there. 5,000 people in an area that's pretty rural. Yeah, so this story there are other stories of the feeding of 5,000 or 4,000 in different gospels that would say things like 5,000 plus women and children. This one doesn't make that distinction, but that's the assumption. Yeah.
And it just seems that regardless of the miraculousness or how exactly this food appeared, that the biggest miracle was bringing people together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Evan talked about how when this came up in the lectionary last year, we talked about it like stone soup. You know, everybody ended up finding something that they had actually brought with them, and this was a moment of spontaneous generosity and community. That when they saw a little boy, and the Greek with 5 loaves of barley and 2 fish willing to share with 5,000 people or more, they were moved emotionally to offer the same or whatever they had in that sharing. Yeah, it's an interesting story. That's how many modern scholars kind of think about this story. It's still a miracle in every way. It's just not the one where, like, there's a poof and a rabbit start coming out of the hat nonstop, you know? Here's maybe a more difficult question for you. One, because it's kind of personal, and because we're very rational people. But have you ever experienced a miracle? The birth of a baby? So having a baby through IVF, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think they're really hard to share. Yeah. So, yep. Mm-hmm. Speak more to that. In what way? Thank you. Howdy. Mm-hmm. I also think that Mary Eddy Stewart, who runs the plant sale every spring, also wonders how that actually happens. It's amazing how it just gets green. It's, yeah, around here. Stunning. Yes, Wayne. Oh. Right. Yeah, I mean, that quickly, like a sponge. Yeah, Wayne. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The gifts of family. Yeah. A family that works. Yeah. Now, I have maybe a miracle. I think I would say it's a miracle to share. When after the Puerto Rico trip was done, we drove out to pick up our kids from my parents' house in Ohio, and where they camped out at the farm for 10 days while we were gone, and we went out there to also spend a week and a half with family. As we were driving out, one of my closest friend's father, who lives in Fort Wayne, Indiana, had a very serious heart attack, and they had to life flight him to a local hospital in Fort Wayne. My friend who lives in Miami was there within 6 hours. And for the first few days, he sat through the night so his stepmom could get some rest during the day as they were waiting to see what the prognosis would be. The father survived the heart attack. But after a couple of days, they restricted access. So my friend was in Fort Wayne, Indiana, not able to see his father, who was still in the hospital in critical condition, and was not getting reports from the stepmom. And I called him. We joke in our group that that my friend is kind of like the Black Knight from Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Like, the arms are cut off and, like, everything's okay, and, you know, the legs are cut off, like, oh, I'm still good, you know. And even talking to him on the phone, I could tell that he was going through a difficult time, that he wasn't coping well, and that he also wasn't coping healthily. So I got off the phone, and I said, it sounds like he's not doing well, to Leah. And she said, well, we're only, like, 2 hours away. You know, just go out and see him. Hang out with him for a few days. And it was great. I hopped in the car. I called him from the road and said, I'm on my way. Let's hang out for a couple of days. And we had a good time distracting ourselves in Fort Wayne, eating Fort Wayne food, which, like the Midwest, is kind of like just humongous portions of like, and going bowling and drinking a little too much probably, but doing it safely. And going to this beautiful bookstore that was like a maze where we spent 3 hours. And gosh, if heaven is a bookstore, this is. And I don't think I did anything serious here, but the fact that I was only 2.5 hours away when I got the call made this trip possible. Because if I was in Vermont or Puerto Rico or any other place, I likely wouldn't have done that trip. And my wife, who's super cool, which goes without saying, who just said, everything's handled. Just go be with your friend. Help him out. That's a miracle in my mind. And what was great was on the last day I was there, they found out that his dad didn't want family to see him go through detox. And on the last day we were there, he was able to see his dad, and his dad's recovering. So is that a miracle? It feels serendipitous. It feels like something conspires. It could be completely chance, but I choose to call it some sort of miracle. The miracle in our story from the Gospels is obvious, the feeding of the 5,000. This sets up what Jesus and what we will be talking about for the next like 4 weeks. Scholars call this section in the Gospel of John Something discourse, bread of life discourse. And basically, we have this week where there is the miracle, and then Jesus kind of talks about the meaning of that miracle in four different places. And he largely skips the walking on water thing, and we're going to skip that one too because it's a rabbit hole, and It comes up later in the lectionary, and it gets us off track. It gets me off track, at least. I think one thing that's interesting is that everyone here in our story ends up being fed. And we've talked about the kind of modern interpretation that folks see generosity from this little boy and then somehow bring about what they have. But I think the characters in this story are kind of cool. You know, Jesus asked the question to Philip almost as a test, you know, where are we to go to get all of the food for these people? And Philip's response is, like, surely not even, like, half a year's wages would buy enough food just for these people to have a snack. And then I think Andrew, maybe the optimistic one or naive one of the group, says, but hey, there's this boy who's got these 5 loaves of bread and he's got like a turkey sub, you know, it's like, and there are 5,000 people in front of him. And so Jesus says, well, that's kind of like good enough. So he has folks sitting down on the grass. He breaks the bread, blesses it, and hands it out, and this miracle takes place. Now, at the end, it's kind of interesting to think about why these people are following Jesus at this time, because our text mentions that the festival of Passover is coming up really soon, which means that if you were an observant Jew, you would be traveling to Jerusalem. Why aren't people getting ready for this travel? No, I think that's an interesting question to ask. Why are they hanging out with this guy in the sticks as opposed to making the trip down? Or what is it about this guy that they want to make king? Maybe making someone king at a Passover festival in Jerusalem would have bore a lot of significance. After all, it's not like Herod Antipas, the regional leader, or Rome was feeding hungry people. And yet this person was. Yet Jesus retreats because this is not what he's here for. I think that it's hard to put this story into a modern context, but imagine that this church hosts an event on the soccer fields behind the church in the entire town of Hinesburg. 4,500 people, according to the 2016 census, come. And after the program's over, they don't want to leave. We want to get out of church. Like, I mean, we're like already looking at the clock by now. And it's 22. But imagine the folks don't want to leave. And they're hungry. And someone says, how are we going to feed these people? So we start brainstorming and we think, well, maybe we can get some pizzas from Papa Nick's and from Good Times. I wonder how quickly the turnover is. And maybe we could raid some shelves for basic stuff at Lampman's and see if Vermont Smoke and Cure is open and buy all of their jerky. And then we could go to the public house if it's in the evening and just order as many things as they can make and go to Bristol Bakery and get a bunch of pastries and then we could go to Subway and grab as many subs as they could make and raid the gas stations and Kenny Drugs for all of the snacks and potato chips. And someone says, imagine what that would cost. Is it really worth it to have a meal that may cost a quarter or a half of our entire annual income here at the church to feed 5,000 people, one meal? I think that it's an interesting question for us to think about. Dr. Karen Marie Yost of Union Presbyterian Cemetery places our story in this kind of funny congregational context. She writes, imagine that Jesus has posed this test question to us. Where are we to buy enough bread for everyone to have a little? Posing this question to a contemporary congregation. One might expect the trustees to echo Philip's money management concern, pointing out that the church does not take in enough revenue to support such a project. The outreach committee might reinforce Andrew's position, stating that the congregation has earmarked only a small percentage of its income for mission giving and proposed projects, and this proposed project exceeds the allocated amount. The groups responsible for faith formation and worship may not offer an opinion because they're busy preparing themselves for a fast approaching religious festival. The Buildings and Grounds Committee might assist with seating everyone on the lawn, although some members might object because they're worried about the landscaping. It's likely that none of the congregation's boards or committees would expect to participate in a miracle, as that is not what they signed up for. They serve out of duty or to contribute to a cause larger than themselves. They identify a few reasonable goals, set some workable plans in motion, and carry out their endeavors with the resources at hand. I do think that Dr. Yost's characterization is a little harsh on congregations, kind of almost a caricature of one. But most of these thoughts actually went through my head when I was reading this story. Especially the question about how would we pay for such a thing? How would we organize? We would need a committee to go to the different stores to make sure all of this happened. Would it be worth it to spend a quarter of our annual budget or half of our annual budget for a one-off event? What's the cost-to-benefit ratio here? But it seems to me that there is an aspect of our faith that calls us to imagine the impossible despite knowing all the facts. There's something about the Christian vocation that calls us to look on the many faces of need, use what we have, and see what happens. See what happens with a kind of faith in God, a God that provides for those in need. Often congregations, and perhaps especially their pastors, get stuck with Philip. There's not enough money. There aren't enough volunteers. There's no time. There's not enough energy or related skills to get some new endeavor done. And so congregations, and perhaps especially their pastors, do what's always been done. Preach the good news. Offer a budget-appropriate mission and outreach program, but then send folks home hungry. These places feel more like institutions than spirit-led communities. Yet, there are many, many spirit-led faith communities challenging God to make miracles happen. This isn't a form of recklessness or a call to recklessness. Rather, it's a call to be hopeful, that God meets us with what we have, and that there is enough for everyone. Recently, a coalition of United Church of Christ churches in the Raleigh-Durham area got together to plant a new church called Common Life Ground and Farm. The ministry and mission of this church start is the practice of being in relationship with God through our relationships with one another and land. They endeavor to give away healthy, chemical-free produce to food insecure families of the church and to the wider community. Food they grow together. They started at the beginning of this year. They meet and have dinner church together as the garden is increasing in bounty. Every week they gather to weed, to plant, to harrow, to hoe, to do what gardeners need to do what small farmers really are doing. Every meal, every time they get together, they share a meal. Much of the meal is produced right there. So they are working together with their hands and their hearts. They're talking. If you've ever worked with someone in the garden, you know, you probably get less done than if you were on your own. But that's kind of the point. It's this wonderful idea. In a time when we are told that churches are declining, this seems kind of awkward. Why would churches band together and create a new church start in their area? I mean, aren't they worried about this new church poaching members from their congregations? No. They see a need that's being met, and they know that God is bigger than their local institutions. As we go about our week, let us consider those places in our lives, in our faith communities, and in our wider communities that need a miracle. Let us imagine what God might do to meet those needs if we just had a few loaves of barley bread and a couple of fish. Then we can see what resources we have, scant as they might be, and see how God makes a difference with them. May God bless you with healthy imaginations this week, and a hope that miracles do happen. Amen.